Meeting will come to order. Good morning, everybody. Apologize for being a couple of minutes late. That's not my style. I think most of you know that, but I wanted to do that just to drive Denny nuts. No, I'm kidding. We got the minutes before you. I think Representative Hancock has moved to approve the minutes.
So moved.
Thank you, sir. Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you. All those in favor of the minutes as presented?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Minutes are approved. Just a little FYI for those of you that may have come in late. DNR's got invasive species calendar up there. I believe on the cart, you can help yourself to one of those. Or if you want one, just raise your hand and our more than efficient page would be happy to bring it over to you. Today on our agenda, we have Assistant Commissioner Bob Meyer. Mr. Meyer, you're before the committee. Make sure that you state your name for the record, and let's proceed.
Mr. Chairman, members, thank you very much. For the record, Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner, Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. I just want to take a brief minute to introduce some other staff that you guys are going to be working with or that we'll be working with very closely in this committee as we talk about budgets. First of all, Barb Julek, our Chief Financial Officer, will be working with me and actually presenting the budget to you all, and we'll be coming around having one-on-one meetings, kind of updating you and briefing you on the governor's budget when that does come out. Next to her is Emily Ng. She's our budget director, who will be working hand-in-hand with us in this committee. And also Pat Rivers, our legislative affairs coordinator. He's my assistant this session, so we will make sure that you have his contact information to help him get your questions answered and get meetings set up and things like that. Whatever you need, he'll be a conduit into the department as well. So, Mr. Chairman, you will see the four of us basically in this committee. As Chairman McNamara stated, his desire is to minimize the amount of staff time we have within the committee so they can continue doing their daily assigned work, but we will make sure we have the appropriate people when possible, when we know they need to be here to answer your questions and also get your questions answered in a timely fashion.
So, Assistant Commissioner Meyer, these people are kind of like the people up here that are the smart people that help us look good. Same for you?
Most definitely.
Yes.
Thank you very much. We welcome working with you. We look forward to it, and we're expecting a productive session, so thank you very much. Mr. Chairman, members, I'm going to try to finish through this presentation today. There is a lot of information. I'm going to go through each division, kind of an overview, talk about the number of FTEs, their base budgets for last biennium. We will be talking in great detail about each divisional budgets, FY14 and 15, past and future budget recommendations when we get to the budget presentations. So if you have questions now, we can certainly try to. We will be recording them and answering those questions for you, but we'll also be presenting this information in greater detail as we do our budget presentation.
Mr. Meyer, I do have a comment. At the chamber dinner last week, Governor Dayton was extolling the merits of Commissioner Zelli and the work that they've done in the Transportation Department to cut the costs and so forth and do some savings and whatnot, and I would hope that your agency will bring some of those same things forward to the committee. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, continuous improvement is a very important part of our processes within the department. We've been recognized at the state level for many of our projects that we have. One of the things we'll be presenting to you is a Department of Enforcement or the Enforcement Division strategic planning process that we've just finished, which does show some streamlining and more effective on-the-ground practices we're looking to implement. Also, we will be sending out to you, I think you may have already received a link to our state park system plan, and we'll get that out to you shortly, which we're going to touch on briefly. It's a plan that we have out for public comment right now, which will drive kind of the operations, future operations within the state park and trail system for the next decade or more. So it's something, two of the key pieces that represent the question that you're asking there, Mr. Chairman. So I'm going to go into lands and minerals just briefly. Lands and minerals is about 3% of the Department of Natural Resources. We have 89 employees approximately within the division. Some of the key functions that lands and minerals has is that they manage our agency real estate transactions and real estate portfolio. They regulate and provide expertise on mineral exploration, mining, and things like that. Mine land reclamation is a key part of the division. They manage our state-owned minerals trusts. And they oversee and work closely with our school trust lands director on the school trust mineral resources. So we're the fiscal agent. We work establishing the royalties for what those mines are charged for trust land revenues, and we coordinate the payment and the deposit of those dollars into the trust. Mr. Chairman, the division of lands and minerals, this budget pie chart is kind of skewed because it has PILT in there under the general open out of 86.1 million, and this is a biannual number. I believe the annual PILT payments are around $27, $28 million right now. So we talked about PILT a little bit. I anticipate we'll have a further or larger discussion about PILT as things progress. So it is a rather complicated group of payments that are out there. Each type of land receives a different payment. For example, acquired land we talked about yesterday is 3.125 or 3.25% of the actual appraised value. Trust land is a different rate. Concon land, which is Consolidated Conservation Land, Representative Fabian knows a lot about that. It's a group of land categories. It's a land category ownership that we have that's primarily in northern Minnesota. So PILT is a big part of this general open, and that comes to the department, and then we transfer that over the Department of Revenue. So this budget number is very skewed, and we'll talk about that in our budget presentation.
Mr. Meyer, to that point, it would be very helpful if you could bring, you know, written descriptions of all those different payments, the amounts, and so forth.
Mr. Chairman, we have that. We'll present that.
Thank you.
So the general fund is about 3%. Other funds, 1%. That's a mixture of funds that are out there. Special revenue would be, it's an account within the department that would be where fees are paid into. Natural Resources Fund are also dedicated accounts that would be provided to Lands and Minerals, and Game and Fish Fund. So Lands and Minerals does all of our land management real estate transactions for the department, Fish and Wildlife, Parks and Trails, Forestry. We also work closely with the Outdoor Heritage Fund, making sure that those acquisitions come through. There's a slide that I'll show you where those dollars, the Outdoor Heritage Fund and also LCCMR funds, Legislative Citizen Commission on Minnesota Resources, we're the fiscal agent. The department acts as the fiscal agent for that as well. So you'll see that bill, I believe, in this committee will come through to you. Many of those appropriations are written to the commissioner for a grant to another party. So we make sure that those dollars are spent in accordance with the law and everything else that's out there. Mr. Chairman, I'm going to move on to ecological and water resources. This division is about 14% of the overall department. Roughly, we spend a lot of sub funds from this division are funded out of the Clean Water Fund, which we'll have a presentation on from the Interagency Clean Water Commission and also from the Clean Water Council. So there's a group of funds, I'm sure you're aware of that. The Clean Water Fund that does fund activities within clean or ecological water resources. Right now, last fiscal year, approximately 68 full-time equivalents were paid out of Clean Water Fund money. Most of those dollars go for monitoring and making sure that our waters are clean and making sure that we're making progress with the Clean Water Funding. So some of the key functions within ecological water resources: long-term health of watershed, support water quality, maintain water quantity, biodiversity, and ecosystem services, provide critical information, regulatory oversight, state and local governments and landowners, and also manage and prevent the spread of invasive species, aquatic and terrestrial, non-game wildlife, the checkoff, you may see the chickadee checkoff or hear about that. Our non-game services are housed in this division, and also threatened and endangered species work lies within this division as well. One of the other things, our environmental review division, our environmental review activities are housed within ecological and water resources, which I'm assuming we'll have a chance to talk about within this division in the future. But there's a lot of exciting projects going on that we're involved with, making sure that they can be done the right way and get permitted and out the door. You can see the budget here for ecological and water resources last for this current biennium, $153.7 million with 17% from the Clean Water Fund. The Environment Natural Resources Trust Fund is 11%, and that would be for projects such as the County Biological Survey, our groundwater geological, county geological atlas, things like that, that we receive one time or ongoing funding for a specific program from the commission. Special revenue, again, is from a group of sources that people are paying into. Federal funds, the other funds is kind of just a conglomeration category. The important piece here is 20% of this division is general funded. and most of those dollars are for the water activities. Our water activities are primarily general fund lies in several key spots within the Department of Natural Resources. It's water, forestry, and parks and trail. And also enforcement. When we get to enforcement, they have a mix of funding, but general fund is our most flexible source of funding for our enforcement division. We do WACA enforcement. We do public health and safety. We can't spend dollars that snowmobilers pay for us to do snowmobile enforcement, or hunters and anglers pay for us to do hunting and fishing enforcement on flood safety, rescue, search and rescue types of activities. So it's important to realize that. Game and Fish Fund, there are a lot of activities. Ecological Water Resources works closely with the Department of Fish and Wildlife. Natural Resources is an account within the DNR budget that funds, again, it's primarily fee-based, that funds our activities. And also Outdoor Heritage Fund projects would be similar to scientific and natural area acquisition or restoration and habitat improvement.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Meyer, thank you for being here. You mentioned earlier, just a few minutes ago, that out of the Clean Water Fund, you're funding 68 full-time employees. Is that right?
Mr. Meyer.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And what portion of that clean water money is going towards those FTEs? Do you know that?
Mr. Meyer.
Out of the total, we are the lesser of any state agency that receives funding out of the Clean Water Fund. I want to say 9 to 10%, don't quote me on that. We'll get you that exact information, but I think if you look at the breakouts of the Clean Water Fund by agency, Bowser receives the largest proportion. Pollution Control Agency would be second, and then the Department of Ag is right in there as well, and the DNR, Department of Health, receive less amounts of money than those other agencies. So we can get you that breakout specifically, Mr. Chairman, Representative Torkelson.
Representative Torkelson. Well,
thank you, Mr. Chair. What I'm curious about is, of the money DNR gets, how much of it goes towards employees and how much of it is used for other things?
Mr. Meyer.
Agency.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Torkelson, we'll get you that exact information, but our clean water appropriations are for boots on the ground monitoring activities, so a lot of that is salary. I mean, we don't do any grants like Bowser does with the clean water funds, so we'll get you that breakdown, though.
Mm-hmm.
We'll break that out.
And thank you. I'd like to know where those employees are housed and what they're doing. Thank you.
Certainly, not a problem.
Mr. Meyer, excuse me. Representative Torkelson, to that point, maybe we can get information from those other agencies as well as to how they're using those dollars. Mr. Meyer.
Thank you very much. And when it comes to constitutional dedicated funds, we do have an operational order. Operational orders are orders that have the effect of rule and law that are signed by the Commissioner published in the State Register. That outlines our funding on constitutionally dedicated funds, make sure that they aren't supplanting, that we're supplementing, not supplanting, and they're spent on the things that the Constitution and the overarching laws require those dollars to be spent on. So we can talk about that as well. Mr. Chairman, moving on to forestry. Forestry, as I mentioned briefly, is another one of our divisions that rely on the general fund. The funding within forestry is kind of complicated. We'll talk about that when we get to the division budget. But a lot of the funds generated off of timber sales go back to the general fund. So one of the things that we hope to discuss with you probably next year would be, how do we untangle this kind of web of funding for the Division of Forestry and streamline and make it more simple to understand. There's about 15% of the department actually employed by the Division of Forestry, or approximately 430 employees. Mostly they're located throughout the forested regions of the state. You just think where the trees are, that's where most of our forestry people are, in the area offices. Big Falls, Effie, Carlsberg, Grigla. They got the good job within the DNR, I should say. It's hard to get them to come to St. Paul because they love their job so much and they don't want to be out in the woods. So hats off to them for their hard work they do. Some of the things that are really key in the Division of Forestry is sustainable yield of forest resources for forest products, clean water, wildlife, habitat, and recreation. There is a huge benefit of our working forests, not only for economic development, but also for clean water and habitat. Without a working forest, we wouldn't have the grouse populations that we have, things like that, be able to provide the outdoor recreation opportunities that is so key to Minnesota. Forest health and productivity on other public, private, and community forest lands are very important to us as well. They also manage, with the oversight from our trust lands director, surface resources, forest products, gravel, trust lands. I'm assuming we'll have a discussion of school trust management within this committee at some point in time this year. They also protect citizens' property and natural resources from wildfire. When the spring fire season, or when fire season or fire approaches, the department really turns on a hat, and all of our resources are capable to be pushed towards fire. We have trained firefighting staff within Fish and Wildlife, within Parks and Trails, not only our forestry, but we are hired people as well that are able to come in and help with us. And the protection of property and lives in a fire are our first and foremost priority. So God help us if we have a huge fire in the future, but we've been able to have some low fire seasons in the past, and when we do have a fire, it really changes our work. So I hopefully we don't have to talk about that. The budget you can see last year, this biennium, is $142 million approximately. The general fund open, or 20%, are our firefighting dollars. So there is an open appropriation, which means that it's not appropriated to us, but we can access those funds with MMB to spend what we need to when there's a fire. So that's 20%. There's a base appropriation of approximately $7 million, and then we can go into the open once that is expended. So that's there. Game and fish, there is some game and fish fund dollars to help us manage the forest for wildlife habitat. Natural resources funds, 19%. Outdoor heritage, 3%. This would be primarily for forest for the future or forest legacy programs, providing acquiring conservation easements to prevent the fragmentation of the forest and keep them working. Clean water funding, talking about that riparian forest interaction there, is about 1%. Special revenue, again, sales of forest products and things like that going to special revenue fund. Federal funds, we do receive federal. And general fund, 35%, which is the biggest part of their budget.
Mr. Meyer,
yes?
When there's a timber sale, where for the stumpage, you know, the number of cords, where does that show up in this budget, the revenue to DNR from the loggers?
Mr. Chairman, it doesn't, I don't think we track the revenues. We can get that information for you. I'm not sure how it shows up within the budget books, but we can talk about that. And again, as I mentioned, the forestry budget is somewhat complicated, but depending on the type of land that is forested, for example, if it's school trust fund land, those dollars ultimately end up after the costs are paid for within the school trust fund. If it's consolidated conservation funds, we split the gross proceeds with the counties right off the top, and then those monies are deposited in what's called the forest management investment account. It'll be kind of a Venn kind of work of art diagram that we have that shows where those dollars go. Everything kind of spins off into different accounts based upon the type of land that we're on. So it's not an easy answer, Mr. Chairman. Well,
not surprising. Thank you. Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, members, Parks and Trails Division is one of our larger divisions. And the workforce of the Parks and Trails Division is 30% of the department, 895 employees, not all of which are full-time. We have a workforce that is seasonal in nature. We have a permanent seasonal workforce that does work within our parks when they're open from basically April until October. And those folks are really the backbone of our Parks and Trails system. And I know we'll be talking a lot more about parks in general, parks and trails, but their main goal is to create unforgettable experiences in the parks, trails, and water recreation that inspire people to pass along their love for nature to current and future generations. So we have a lot of experiences that are out there. Parks, state forest campgrounds, trails that people really enjoy, and once they experience that, or trying to get them to experience that, is a big part of our programs as well. The diverse nature-based recreation contributes to the health of visitors and also rural economy. And if you think about rural economics, and if you have a state park in your district, and some of you do, a lot of you do looking around the table, it's really the tourism that drives those facilities. If you look at Itasca, for example, not a lot of people, not everybody that goes to Itasca will stay overnight there, but they will go into town, they'll go to Walker, they'll go to Capicona, they'll go and get gas, they'll have dinner, they'll stay at those resorts and go visit the park. So we work very closely with the resorts and campgrounds associations to provide that linkage there. Preserving.
Representative Torkelson has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Meyer. You know, we've had some conversations in recent years about the usage, varying usage from state park to state park. Are there any plans to evaluate the number of parks we have and possibly close some down or change their nature if the numbers aren't justifying the
Mr. Meyer.
Cost?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Torkelson must have been looking at my next slide, because this is the slide that talks about that kind of thing. Our system plan outlines kind of where we want to go. Have rustic parks. We have these gems, right, the jewels of the park system that are high destination parks. Itasca, Lake Vermilion is going to quickly turn into one of those parks as we get the campground up and running here. So we have these destination parks. We have parks that are, you know, parks, and we have these rural rustic nature parks, and we're working with stakeholders to talk about that. The challenge is all of the parks are established within statute, so ultimately we would need to pass a law or remove something out of Chapter 86A, transfer ownership. We're talking about with the Greater Minnesota Parks and Trails Commission. We're looking at having conversations with them in the future about how do these two systems work. Perhaps some of our parks should be more rustic in nature and be more of like a wildlife management area campground. And so we are talking about that very seriously, and this plan will outline that. Possibly if there's time, we may be able to present some of those key findings or pieces of this plan within, I think that would be in the Mining and Outdoor Recreation Committee, but I would assume that conversation would need to be here as well. So please take a look at this. If you'd like a hard copy, we can provide you one, because this does answer some of those questions, Representative Perkins.
Representative Perkinson?
Thank you, Mr. Follow-up? Chair. Well, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Meyer. I appreciate that. I assure you I was not peeking at your presentation.
Not a problem.
Just dumb luck.
One of those opportunities that we need to talk about, Representative Torkelson, is some of these new ideas. The Minnesota River Valley presents that opportunity for us, and talking about how do you connect facilities, parks, how do you provide recreation that people want. We're very, very aware of what people want. Trying to meet those needs is sometimes a challenge, but we're working on that in that specific area, creating a corridor, if you will, of trails and networks linking parks and facilities together.
Representative Dill, you have a question.
Thank you, Chair Fabian. And Mr. Meyer, could you give us at some point the amount of backlog maintenance on the park system statewide? I think that, again, requires review, because I recall it's around $100 million. I mean, that's a staggering amount of money. And I think that the committee as a whole needs to be aware of that and what the implications are as we move forward, not maintaining these parks and also for establishing new ones. That would be important information for us to know at some point.
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Dill, thank you for that question. That is very important, and taking care of what we have is one of the pillars of our legacy funds as well. But there is a asset management iceberg that we kind of deal with at the department, right? We just deal with the tip of this iceberg, but you look underneath and we have huge assets, not only in parks and trails, but every place else that need to be maintained, and we will provide that information for you.
Proceed, Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, members, so parks and trails budget is $236 million, $237 million roughly. Natural Resources Fund, parks entrance fees, firewood, campground rentals, canoe rentals, things like that make up the large part of Natural Resources Fund. This is where all of the dedicated accounts go, right? And those dedicated accounts have specific statutory sidebars on them. I encourage you to look at the statutes as we come up. If you ever need something to help you fall asleep, just pick up, I think it's volume 3, volume 2, and start with 84 and work your way up to 97, and it'll provide you with all of our authorities and specific statutory requirements on the account. Snowmobiling can only be spent on snowmobiling activities, ATV registrations only on ATV activities, and so forth. So we're very cognizant of that. You can see the Parks and Trails legacy money, 25%. We'll be talking about how we spend and invest those dollars. 1% from the Environment Trust Fund, special revenue 7%. General fund is 18%, but the general fund really is what pays our workers. It's what gets the toilets cleaned. It's what gets the grass cut, and things like that. So, and we have been facing significant declines within our general fund, just the challenges that are out there that we've all been facing with inflation and things like that. So we'll be talking about that more as we get to the governor's budget, hopefully.
Mr. Meyer, just for information for some of our newer members, how many state parks do you manage?
Mr. Chairman, there's 67 state parks and 7 state recreation areas. So recreation areas such as Cuyuna Country Recreation Area, mountain biking destination facility up in Representative, not Hancock, in up in the Cross Lake Deerwood kind of area is a huge up and coming state recreation area. We also have Gilbert Recreation State Recreation Area, which is a motorized recreation area up by Representative Dill's district, or in Representative Dill's district, close, right on the border probably. So that's an old mining facility that we've created into a destination motorized state recreation area. So state recreation areas in statute are protected to provide for large use. So they're sustainable for large quantities of people to use kind of in a very specific fashion. So we can talk about that more when we get there.
Mr. Representative Dill, go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Fabian. One of the things that intrigues me is about who pays for what. Kind of reminds me of football programs at the university and the big earners versus the no earners or little earners. You have any comment on that? I mean, are there the ones that raise the huge money that then pay for the ones that don't use raise the huge money? Is that kind of a characterization that would be accurate?
Mr. Chairman, the representative, thank you for raising that question because it does draw to light some of the challenges we face tied to your other question of asset preservation, protecting what we have. Our non-motorized groups are the bikes is all general fund or bonding to take care of the bike trails, and that's a huge part of our asset preservation need. It's about $100,000 to put a new trail, $100,000 per mile to put a new bike trail in for pave. So you look at the trails that have been established in statute or the work that was accomplished in last year's bonding bill. There's a lot of work that's out there, but there's no user fee to protect or to pay for that ongoing operations and maintenance of the non-motorized system compared to the snowmobiling. I mean, the grant and aid program that we have out there is fantastic. The state trail system. I mean, even the horseback riders are supposed to have a horse trail pass to pay for some of their work. So it's a question that we often raise is how do you fund these things? You know, build it and they will come, but how do you take care of it after that? So we can provide more detail on those needs with that response on the asset preservation.
Follow-up, Representative Dill?
No.
Mr. Meyer, I have a question for you. You mentioned Representative Hancock. Representative Purcell is here. The LaSalle Lake area. I think that some of us understood that it was going to be managed one way and maybe it's not being managed the way that some of us in the legislature thought. I'm going to be asking you to maybe bring to the committee kind of a report on what's going on at LaSalle Lake. And then the other thing that I'm interested in is to follow up on Representative Dill's comments. You know, revenues versus expenses. I'm assuming that you're going to bring that as well in some of our parks. And then I have one of my family members who's an avid bicyclist, and a lot of the trails are asphalt trails. You talked about $100,000 per mile. My family tells me that the crushed granite trails work just as effectively as the asphalt trails. Is there any discussion in the agency about how trails are constructed in the future? You know, and how they're constructed now. I'm not a bicycler, okay? Full disclosure, I ride my bicycle to go up to the post office, and that's about it.
We can get that information and have that conversation with you. There's a large part of our trail network is paved, but there are many trails that are not paved as well. And again, it goes to expectations and what user groups want. So rather than myself answer that question, we'll make sure that we talk about that within our Parks and Trails Division when they're up here.
Representative Dill.
I do have somewhat of a follow-up question. I'm trying to think of, you know, we got a lot of parks, like you said, 67 at least. And Greenleaf Park, that Representative Erdahl that established that park. I'm trying to remember, during those discussions, that's the statutory designation, did the department caution or work with us, and I'm sorry that I don't remember all those details, about this idea that you might have a park that isn't that doesn't raise enough money to pay for its own asset preservation or even operation. Let's start with operation. Is that usually a discussion as a state park is brought about? I mean, look at Lake Vermilion. I anticipate that will be pretty significant in it as an income earner. But we have a lot of parks that aren't. And the North Shore parks, I suspect, are good income earners, and they're paying for a lot of things. that the users aren't paying for in other areas. That just seems to be a constant problem, and has that been a thread of the discussion in our committee, especially this one?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Dill, the Greenleaf situation, we were working with the legislature expressing some ideas, possibly it should be a wildlife management area or a state recreation area. The citizens really wanted it to be a state park. There's a group of people, I think you have your constituents that feel the same way, that want that state park sign on the side of the road saying Teddy Gooch, George Magni, whatever it might be, state park 5 miles ahead, right? So that's a discussion we have with the members and then the citizens, and the legislature ultimately designates those parks. Greenleaf was a proposed state park in statute for a while before they made it a state park. So that's kind of a different situation. We were concerned about that, but the question you bring up is a good one, that there have been parks, LaSalle, Vermilion, Greenleaf, that have been added to the system without adding any additional operating funds. Typically in the past, when a new park was created, there would always be operations appropriation increase associated with that. So it is a discussion we need to have, and we try to work closely with the stakeholders and the legislature to make sure that as we're looking at these parks, they are park worthy, so to speak. So I think we're going to have discussions in the future on what do we call some of these things. You know, state park in statute that says they have to be protected in perpetuity, so that's one of the challenges that we have. You know, how do we, what do you do with the statutes and laws overarching some of these designations, and how do we manage them in the future?
Representative Dill.
All right. I get that. And I kind of thought that's what my recollection of this. I only want to caution the committee as we look forward and have someone come with a state park. I can only think of the park that I live in, which is Voyagers, and the fact that in 69, 70, 71, and 72, a lot of people that wanted that national park sign out in front of, on the highway out there, were pretty rabid about it because they thought it was going to be this big. And the fact the Park Service even went as far in 1971 as telling our communities that there would be so many people that they'd have to build a four-lane highway to Crane Lake to service the people. Well, the park has been static at 200,000 visitors, and it's a beautiful park. It's great for the preservation of the community, but we still have, and we have less visitors now than we did in 1975. So, I mean, not everything is always gold in every situation. I just want to caution people when they come forward with a new state park.
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Dale, those are great comments, and one that we're very aware of all the time. We're very cognizant of how do we make sure that our state park system remains relevant, and we're reaching out to new constituents, new customers, new users, because part of our heritage is outdoors and enjoying the lands that we have, and we view the parks as the gateway to getting those people in to do some fishing, learn about natural wildlife and wildlife heritage, and get them into other sporting ventures as possible. So.
Representative Neuberger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Meyer, Commissioner. I have some good friends that are family-owned business. They own resorts up in the northern half of the state. And having discussions with them over the course of the years, one of their big concerns has been the growth of these camper cabins that you're putting in the different state parks. They're much less expensive than getting a cabin at a regular resort. And one of the concerns that they have is they feel like the state is competing with them, that they're almost, in some areas, they feel like they're being undercut. I was just curious if you could shed some light on that, if you have had any discussions, number one, any discussions with the resort industry about this issue. And number two, do you plan on expanding these camper cabins that are about 20% of the price of a normal cabin?
Representative Meyer.
We're very well aware of the concern that the resort community has with our camper cabins, and we work with them. I work with the Congress of Minnesota Resorts, Minnesota Resort Hospitality, Resort Campground Association very closely. Met with both of those organizations back in October, November. The commissioner did as well, and we'll meet with them when they're here at the Capitol. It's kind of the yin and the yang, right? People want to go to a camper cabin. They're very primitive. They have beds. They have lights, electricity, no toilet, no running water. I think we look at that as getting people out to the outdoors. Some people might come there and then say, know, that vault toilet, that's not for me. I want to go to a regular cabin, right? And we try to promote wherever we can, and we want to do more of that, where these resorts are, what amenities they have, and when the parks are full, I'm hopeful that our managers are saying, well, you can go to Ludlow's Resort, or you can go wherever you want and stay. There's resorts in the areas, right? So we need to work with them closely. We need to make sure that we're upfront and honest about our development plans. I think the goal for the system is about 200 camper cabins. I'm not sure where we're at right now. We probably have 100 and something right now. But not flooding the market by any means, providing this unique niche opportunity, but also making sure that we're promoting the local businesses as well as where we need to be. So we're trying to be upfront and honest with those businesses and making sure that we're coexisting together as much as we can.
Representative Neuberger, follow up?
No.
Mr. Meyer, if you were to take those cabins and from time they're constructed through, I mean, do they cash flow or are they being subsidized? And do they have Wi-Fi in them?
That's a lot of questions. We can certainly get you the cost breakdown on where they are. They are probably $50 to $75 a night, so they aren't that cheap, really, and they're very popular. So I don't know what year they break even at. And some of our parks do have Wi-Fi. One of the barriers we found is that some people, a barrier for them is, which is unfortunate, is getting not connected, right? They gotta go check their email at 5 o'clock or at 6 o'clock or something like that. Myself, as soon as I can get out of range, the happier I am when I have no signal. But
well, I know
some people want to be connected, and that's a barrier that they had going to the park system. So visitor centers, the cabins themselves wouldn't have Wi-Fi, but some of the visitor centers, some places within the parks do have Wi-Fi.
I know that at a certain lake about 3 hours north of Thunder Bay, you can check your email.
Which just shouldn't be right. So.
Mr. Meyer, Representative Dill, I knew he was going to go ahead.
Camper cabins. So I'm pretty blessed with state parks, and we got quite a few camper cabins. I'm probably going to get beat over the head by the Minnesota Resort Congress. But a lot of the folks complained about this as they were established that are in my communities, in the communities that I represent. But at the end of the day, it all went away. And at the end of the day, people have said to me, well, it brings more people to the area. And they then, one of the things about the tourism business is acquisition of guests, cost of acquisition. And I think that there's a sense at the basic level that when people come to an area and then they slowly upgrade to amenities, that they wouldn't get. Now, there's always going to be the core people that want the camper cabin, or for that matter, they want to go in the Boundary Waters and be in a tent and be by themselves. That's always, but at least they came to the area, and they bought the basic services and things like that and upgraded. And I'm thinking about how that works up where I'm in the resort business. I mean, I want every single resort and every single tourist operator and fly-in operator to be absolutely wildly successful, because I know the more people that come to the area, the more people that will come to me over time. And I think that there's a basic underlying misconception about the camper cabin. It has not been an issue, other than when they're originally established. That's when some of the folks that are in the level that's close to the camper cabins economically make an issue of it. So, I mean, I'm not saying that you should go out and build a whole bunch more, but at the end of the day, I think it brings more people to a specific area, and at the gas station and maybe at restaurants or bait stores. I mean, that all makes communities tick. And so just a basic, an observation over 13 years of being here and being in that business.
Mr. Meyer?
Mr. Chairman, thank you, Representative Dill, for those words. And again, it's communication, it's being upfront and honest and working together, I think, are the keys to successful park and trail division operations and private industry as well. So it's something that we strive for, I personally strive for in my work. So we will continue to do that.
Mr. Meyer, I do have another question on your on the one slide that where you said that Representative Torkelson was anticipating your next comment. and the repurposing or whatever definition that you words you use to describe what may happen in the future, how long inside of your agency have those discussions been going on? I've been told by some of the local people up there it's been going on for 10, 12 years. Is that kind of accurate?
Mr. Chairman, it's these types of discussions haven't been 10 or 12 years. We've been talking about the future of the park systems and how do you fund it for many bienniums now, as we've been facing with different challenges here and there. We've gone to like satellite operations and things like that. I think you've seen that. We can talk about that more, where we have one manager managing three or four parks. That just doesn't work anymore, especially in your district. I mean, you know how far you have to go from one place to another. We have a person managing Old Mill, managing two other parks. And from park to park, it's 100 miles or more. So that person potentially could spend more time in the car than they actually could in the park. So management and operations is something we're looking at very closely. How do we create those efficiencies? But this kind of tiered system that's outlined in the plan, talking about rustic, talking about destination parks, is a new concept for us. Right now, a park is a park is a park, and kind of is, I don't want to say that, I just say that generically, that they're open, you know, beginning of May, and they close the end of October. Maybe some should close after Labor Day because there's not much usership after that. Maybe they shouldn't open until Memorial Day. Those are the types of things that we need to talk about and work with our stakeholders, the Parks and Trails Council, the legislature, our user groups. Most of these parks have friends groups that are very, very dedicated to the operations of these parks. But we need to have an open, honest discussion about the future, and that's what this document is the start of. So we're hopeful to have that in the next 4 months.
Mr. Meyer, I encourage you to do that rapidly because you mentioned Old Mill State Park and Hayes Lake State Park and those types of things has been a source of a lot of concern for the people that do use those in our areas, and they see them being neglected and their budgets are being cut and water lines are not being replaced and repaired until July or August after they open. And I would encourage you to get in touch with stakeholders as soon as possible to have those discussions. Representative Cornish has a question or two.
Actually, just a comment. And on the camper cabins, just a thumbs up on the camper cabins, and it mirrors what Representative Dill said. We go up to Teteguch and we hike back in and Micmac Lake, way back to a cabin, and it must be over a mile back there. By the time we get there, we're all winded, and we chop our own wood, we carry our own water. It's a real primitive old logging camp. But when we go up there, we stop in Two Harbors and we buy groceries. We go up to Finland to get bait, and we go up and down the shore at the trinket shops and shop. And so we don't come up self-contained carrying everything. We buy a lot of the stuff while we're up there and visit the establishment. So I think that really is a plus there.
Well, Representative Cornish, I heard that Representative Draskowski does some backpacking in too, and he's chopping his own wood, but I think it's black walnut trees that he's been using. Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, no comment on that. Thank you.
Not up there.
If there's no more questions on the Parks and Trails, I'll move on to Fish and Wildlife Division. Fish and Wildlife Division is one of the...
Bill has a question first.
Just one more thing. I thought of this as Representative Cornish talking. There's one resort in my community. 80 people live in my community year-round. There's one resort that has 20 cabins. That's 10% of what your goal is, statewide. Right? I heard you say you had 200 cabins. I mean, you hope to have 200. One resort has 20 cabins. That's 10% of the statewide goal. I don't think it's overdone. Thank you.
Mr. Meyer, proceed.
Mr. Chairman, members, thank you very much. Fish and Wildlife Division is what some people will think is one of the core divisions. But the Department of Natural Resources, when people see our logo, it means a lot of different things to a lot of different people. To a lot of people in the state, it means deer hunting, it means pheasant hunting, it means grouse hunting. Other people, as we just talked about, it means camping and hiking within the state park. So Fish and Wildlife Division is 21% of our department, or 633 employees. 44% are wildlife, kind of. Not kind of. 44% roughly are wildlife employees, and 56% are fisheries employees. The Division of Fish and Wildlife, as you can imagine, manages our populations, right? Conservation, management, and enhancement of the habitat for state fish and wildlife. Regulation, restoration, research, monitoring, education. Healthy and productive fish and wildlife populations on a sustained basis. You know, we want to provide those lasting memories, a high quality and abundant fishing, hunting, trapping, and other fish and wildlife recreation opportunities. And then effective collaboration and partners with citizens to manage, use, and understand and appreciate fish and wildlife resources. outreach and education is also a big part of Fish and Wildlife. It isn't listed here, but the ICANN series that we talk about within Parks and Trails, we also have recently started a very popular program, adult mentoring for hunters. You may have seen an article in the paper this past fall about that. Getting these 20 and 30 year olds who never had the opportunity to hunt as they were growing up out into the field is a huge, exciting new opportunity for us that we're working on. One of the other things we're talking about is how can we take this program and tie it into depredation issues where a producer may have depredation issues. Perhaps we can tie those issues or concerns with our adult mentoring program to get the people who want to hunt out where there's a need to have species managed. So something that we're just discussing right now. The budget for Game and Fish, actually, Fish and Wildlife Division, there is little general fund, 6%. It's quickly dwindling. There was a period of time where there was no general fund within the Fish and Wildlife Division. 54% is driven by licenses, hunting licenses, fishing licenses, stamps, things like that. Natural Resources Fund, special permits would go in there. Outdoor Heritage Fund, 28%. Now, you'll see another slide here when we get to our Operations Support Services Division that shows the pass-through dollars from the Outdoor Heritage Fund and LCCMR that again, kind of skew our budget, because if you look at the total, there's the general fund PILT, there's a general fund for treaty payments out there, open appropriation for treaty payments to the bands that we have agreements with, and then there's pass-through dollars, Outdoor Heritage Fund, and LCCMR. So we'll make sure you understand those breakouts as we get to them. The bulk, as I said, 54% is license fees, 28% from Outdoor Heritage is for work on the ground or acquisitions, expanding the boundaries of wildlife management areas, aquatic management areas, and things like that, or doing restoration habitat improvements. Federal funds are a very small part of it, and Environment Natural Resources Trust Fund is a small percentage. The 1% Clean Water Fund primarily is used for IBM. It's called Index of Biotic Measurement, or something. I think I'm pretty close. Where we're doing, I just know the acronyms, right? Where we're doing population work or survey work within rivers and streams to make sure that the creatures that are sustained there, they are a true canary in the coal mine of water quality. So this index that we're working on, making sure that there's the right type of bugs and fish within the rivers and streams that are a huge indicator of the quality of the water. Mr. Chairman, the Division of Enforcement works very closely with all of our other divisions that are out there.
Representative Dillon's question.
Back on the previous slide. Okay, so I'm wondering if the department has got a way to look at the trap shooting league for the kids that's approaching 7,000 and having a correlation. I see in your book that you gave us, that real nice book with the moose on the front of it, that you know, hunting is down, I think, 11%. Are you going to be able to figure out how those dots connect in the next decade? Kids that are coming into that, I mean, 7,000 kids almost in shooting sports in Minnesota statewide is pretty, well, it's the biggest in the world. No one can touch Minnesota's program that those folks as a nonprofit did. Are you going to be able to connect those dots? Youth that are converted from never been in the wild, never been in fishing, never been hunting, figure out how that works and make those indexes go back the other direction. Has that been thought about in the agency?
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Dill, not as a bean counting exercise, but it's certainly we view those participants as our up and coming customers, right? It's getting them into making that, connecting the dots from shooting a clay target, shooting in a trap league, to going grouse hunting or going pheasant hunting primarily. So providing those opportunities, I think they're a built in clientele for our recruitment programs or our youth hunt programs and things like that. We need to do more of that, but there is. We are aware of that connection, and how do we expand on that nexus?
Representative Dale.
Well, the reason I ask that is because the challenge is going to be in the future to keep ahead of that program and keep funding in front of it. And in order to justify the funding here in the legislature, for example, I'm certain there's going to be another appropriation or something that supports that program like we did the $2 million last year. It's going to be important to be able to eventually, we're not going to see it right away, but to connect those dots so that we know that we need to, if we need to keep funding that program and working on it into the future. Not just to, I don't know how to do it, but I'm just encouraging us to figure it out.
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, we will work on that and get back to you with that. The grant project that Representative Dill is talking about is we were able to get a $2 million appropriation out of the Game and Fish Fund last year, primarily related to the Pittman-Robertson federal excise dollars tied to guns and ammunition sales to do grants for these local clubs to expand their facilities. And actually, we were able to get relatively quickly about $400,000, I believe, out the door so that those activities will be ready to go this spring. We're also getting ready to issue an RFP for the remainder of those funds, which will be for new projects as well. The first RFP was for $5,000 to $25,000 grants for a trap shooting clay target machine, voice activated machines, upgrades, ADA compatibility, lights, electricity, things like that. It didn't include roads or toilets or things like that that may be associated with the new facility, but now we're looking at actually providing funding for new facilities as well with this next round of RFP.
Mr. Meyer, to that point, up where we live, I understand it was passed during the last legislative session, but it took a while to get the RFP done. But in some cases, it was done because of our short construction season. I guess where I'm going is that are you planning to get those out very soon so that those RFPs can be done, and when summer is here, spring is here, they can start on their projects?
Mr. Chairman, we are, and I can get back to you on this specific date. We will make sure that you are notified when that RFP is released. So
thank you.
Proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On to the Division of Enforcement. This is a picture of Brandy, one of our zebra muscle detecting dogs, and you know, enforcement is very important for us. So it's about 7% of the department. Currently, we have about 225 employees. We have 181 conservation officers in the field right now, but we have 210 field stations. So we are down substantially in our field stations, and it's one of the things we'll be talking to you about when we get to the budget, hopefully, is the need to have a couple more academies, right? If we don't continue recruitment and retention activities within enforcement, we'll be down another 25 positions by the end of the biennium. So getting a couple academies going is very important to us. One of the things we're also looking at and we were able to establish is it's called the CO Prep Program, where we take people who are not in a traditional law enforcement background but have a wildlife management degree perhaps, or a parks and trails background or forestry, and provide some funding for them to get their law enforcement credentials so they can qualify and get into the enforcement program. It's a way to diversify our employment, so we're very excited about that as well. Division of Enforcement basically is again, looking at our clientele. They are the face of the DNR for the most part. You see them out and about. You'll see them interacting with our clients out in the field, making sure that public safety and compliance with laws on state game and fish, land and water-based, motorized and non-motorized activities, natural resource commercial operations, and environmental protection are done in a sustainable fashion. They also support our effectiveness in the department, making sure that we're maintaining and using our resources adequately through quality law enforcement. And they oversee our education and safety programs, so our firearm safety programs, snowmobile safety, ATV safety, boat and water safety programs are all coordinated out of Camp Ripley through our education and training division. The budget is, as I mentioned, is relatively straightforward. It's 60% out of the Game and Fish Fund, 28% out of those dedicated accounts within the Natural Resources Fund, 11% general fund. And Representative Cornish could speak to this if he wants. They track their time based upon activity. So they have an eight-way funding split. When you get into Natural Resources, it's snowmobile, it's ATV, it's water rec. Those types of activities, we code down to the specific activity. So it makes it somewhat challenging when this balance becomes out of skew. So as the general fund dollars decrease, we have to do either more game and fish fund enforcement or more ATV snowmobile enforcement. So Representative Bill, one way to keep our enforcement guys off of your constituents' back is to give us more general fund. So,
Representative Deal, you have a comment?
Other activity.
Nothing like a good old fashioned payoff, right?
I didn't mean it like that, but you know what I'm talking about.
I know what you mean.
Proceed with caution.
Mr. Chair, yes. So, the funding is very important. Our funding mix for enforcement does drive our activities, and it's tied to that fund integrity. We may be talking about some opportunities to provide a little flexibility in that funding this session that would provide the overall accountability back to the accounts, but give us some flexibility into the future as well. Operation Services is the people or the division that gets us paid, that does our timesheets, works with Minute to make sure our computers and phones are running properly. They take care of all of our buildings that are there. Commissioner Landwehr showed you the map of where we're located. It's interesting. Our workforce is in pretty much, I know it's in every legislative district, it's in every county, it's in every, I don't want to say township, but we're all over the state with employees, right? Our employees are in all of your districts. They're your constituents and citizens of the state. But Operation Services make sure our offices are working. The heat's on, the lights are on, the toilets are flushing, our cars are in good order, our equipment that we need to maintain are in good order, and also that our employees are safe and well taken care of. So you can see this, they provide administrative leadership to carry out our natural resources mission. There's a direct budget and accountability process for effective use of about $500 million per year. Basically, it's a pay-as-you-go type system where we bill the divisions back and they pay our Office of Support Services for those services. So we have a fleet account. We have we have professional services rates that are funded to this division that the legislature approved. Probably about 10 years ago, the divisions used to be appropriated dollars for these activities, and then they were paying these dollars back. I should say it's the other way around. This division used to be appropriated funds from the legislature, and then this was a standalone division. Now it's a pay-as-you-go service, so that those dollars were reappropriated back to the divisions, and now the divisions pay those costs back to us. You'll hear us talk about direct and necessary charges or fees and costs. When we talk about some of the dedicated funds, these are the costs that are covered from those funds. So delivering the integral DNR business services, accounting, emergency management and response, fleet, facilities, state deployment and safety. We have over 200 work sites that I mentioned, almost 3 million square feet of business and office space. And they lead the agency's work in operational excellence and continuous improvement. Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Meyer, you mentioned professional services. You and I have had several conversations about land surveys and the transfer of lands from a state to an individual for a boundary survey that's, you know, been done, and now all of a sudden somebody's drain field is on state land and that sort of stuff. I went back and checked some of my records on professional services. What limit, you said that the legislature gave you that authority. Does the legislature then put any caps on how much you can charge, or, you know, it appears to me like there's a significant amount of inflation, and you and I can have a conversation and compare a couple of things offline here, but I am concerned about the trajectory on those professional services charges on the settlements of some of these surveys and the transfer of ownership on, you know, 7/10 of an acre, and all of a sudden we're getting $1,700 in professional services or something. Your comments, please.
Mr. Chairman, that is a different issue than what I'm talking about here with this division. I'm talking, what I was mentioning for operational services is internal to the department. So it's divisions within, it's funding these activities on a divisional basis. The activities you're speaking about primarily come from the divisions themselves. It would be Fish and Wildlife, working with Lands and Minerals to do those activities, and sharing those costs for the survey work and things like that with the constituents that are in some cases benefiting or have caused these problems. So we can talk about that offline, Mr. Chairman, and discuss those costs in particular. But we try to share or split those costs wherever applicable or where we have the authority to. In some cases we'll pay for the whole thing if it's applicable. So not in those situations probably, but there are issues that arise where, you know, they need to be covered in different ways. So I'm well aware of the situations that you're speaking of, and we can talk about them.
Thank you.
Members, moving forward, just a pie chart of the budget, and this is what I was mentioning. This, I don't want Representative Green to get too upset when he sees it's 84% Outdoor Heritage Fund, but this is the pass-through dollars that we have.
Representative Green, you have a comment?
Yeah, I said too late.
Okay.
So these are the dollars that we are appropriated that go specifically towards individual entities for a grant to the DNR for X purposes, and we execute those grant agreements and make sure that they're spent and closed out in accordance with law. You can see the Natural Resources Fund, the other funds, special revenue, and then just as the Outdoor Heritage Fund, you can see an Environment Natural Resources Trust Fund dollars there as well that were the fiscal agent. Members, that is the divisional summary of the department on a division-by-division kind of overview. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to give you that, and as I mentioned in the beginning, we'll be spending a lot more detail and time talking about those specific budgets and numbers and FTEs with the division directors, with our chief financial officer, and with you all in committee and outside of committee talking about that. The rest of our presentation, I just kind of wanted to provide an overview of our conservation agenda because these strategic missions or strategic plans and program objectives are tied to our budget, and you'll be seeing these themes within our budget presentations in the coming weeks. So overall, just performance management within the department, you can see this kind of diagram here going up from performance measure. The missions and goals, I should say, going down. Missions and goals, agency strategies and actions, program budget objectives, and then measurements and targets. And then you can see the circle. We plan, we budget, we measure, and we adapt. Kind of adaptive management is what we're all about in the field and also at a programmatic level, making sure that we're staying relevant to our customers, making sure that our programs are working, connecting that agency missions and goals and strategic plans and spending and boots on the ground activities is very important to our overall performance and existence. So we handed out this plan yesterday. It's also on our website. This will be guiding our work for the next decade and also for the next biennium and into the future. There's four goals that are outlined within the plan. I think we briefly talked about them yesterday. Goal one is that our waters, natural lands, and diverse fish and wildlife habitats are conserved and enhanced. You can see some of the strategies there is identify lands and waters at risk, set priorities for managing, manage the lands and waters in a healthy in ways that maintain and foster healthy habitats, conserve those areas, restore the health of degraded areas, waters, wetlands, rivers, grasslands, and then monitor and adjust management as that work is accomplished. So some of the key performance measures that are outlined there, here's a picture of some folks doing one of those biological surveys that we talked about, making sure that our waters are maintaining adequate levels and populations of desired species, looking at the acres of DNR forest land that are re-inventoried so we know what's on our land and where it's at, and how do we promote, take care of those trees. Making sure we have an up-to-date inventory, forest inventory, is very critical to maintaining the industry that we have. They need to know what kind of timber is going to be coming off the lands, not only now but into the future. And to allow us to attract new business into the state, they need to make sure that we have a sustainable timber base for them to harvest and make products out of. Monitoring wildlife populations is just another example of our performance measures that are there. One of the example performance measurements that are there, and I know we're going to talk about this, they talked about some of this stuff in the Water Commission earlier this week, and we'll be talking in the Ag Committee, and I'm assuming this committee, about water use and appropriations. But monitoring water, groundwater use in Minnesota, making sure that as the population grows, we have water to make sure we can continue to grow and continue to grow crops, produce food, live our neighborhoods, provide water for our neighborhoods and our cities and towns, and avoid impacts. So monitoring the water usage is very critical to us. This slide just shows that use. Moving on to goal two, talking about Minnesota's outdoor recreation opportunities, and we talked about this a little bit, make sure that we're meeting the needs of our new and existing participants so that they all feel connected to nature. Some of the key strategies focus on learning, making sure that families are learning how to do this. Some people are afraid to sleep in a tent, right? They don't want to sleep outside. They think that they're going to be attacked. So making sure that they realize that they're okay sleeping in a tent, and somebody's bear or something's not going to come running through their
Timberwolf.
Wall. Timberwolf. You know, we'll talk about that next week. But making sure that they have a safe opportunity to enjoy these experiences is one of the key things. And a lot of these people go to camper cabins with their families, these young adults. They may not have a tent, or they don't want to sleep outside with the babies and things like that. Develop and promote outdoor programs. I talked about our I Can series. I can camp, I can canoe, I can climb. Leverage outreach by engaging our partners in outdoor recreation, recruitment, retention. Implementing retention and marketing activities to maintain our base, minimize the loss. and then maintain our and enhance our high-priority outdoor recreation systems. So a couple of the performance measures associated with this goal: number of state park users, number of hunting and fishing licenses sold. This next chart just kind of shows where park use is on an annual basis. Your blue line is year-round permit sales. The red line is one-days, and then one-day sales or temporary permits. And then the green line are camping nights. You can see that it is as maintained over the years. It stays strong and continues to grow. The dip there in 2011, that is when we were shut down over the 4th of July. The 4th of July holiday is one of the biggest year seasons for us. So, I mean, we make a lot of money at the end of June, beginning of July within the park system. So that's what the dip is there.
Mr. Meyer, kind of following back to what Representative Dill was talking about, recruiting young people in, I'm sure that you're going to bring statistics to the committee on the number of people purchasing hunting, fishing, trapping licenses as well. I'm very interested to see that. That will be measure some of the outcomes.
Mr. Chairman, we have that. We can get that.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Meyer, as part of your performance measures, do you track how successful your programs are to increase game species on state-owned land?
So, would you...
I'm thinking first of pheasants, actually, Commissioner Meyer. You know, we have state-owned property that is set aside for hunting, and we talk a lot about pheasant populations, and I assume that DNR makes some effort to increase populations on these state-owned lands. Do you track that as part of your performance measures?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Parkinson, I believe we do. I mean, habitat improvements and enhancements and game population increases, there's certainly a benefit by having stronger habitats, but here in Minnesota, the weather, I think, at certain points of time, it can be more devastating than any habitat improvements we have. If you have a wet spring, it can really impact the hatching success rate of pheasants and grouse. But we can get that information for you, Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Meyer, you know, we often hear, I'm an ag guy and I'm kind of sensitive to some of this stuff, but we constantly hear that because of the decreased number of CRP acres, for instance, that we're having a severe impact on pheasant populations. When we're having that conversation, we don't seem to talk about the bad weather and the difficult nesting conditions. And now we're talking about the DNR land. All of a sudden, we have all these excuses.
Mr. Meyer, Representative Torkelson, I didn't mean to make excuses at all. There's a lot of complicating factors. The loss of habitat is one of them, both on state-owned lands and other lands. I think Commissioner Landwehr did a good job yesterday talking about the loss of CRP and what that means. I think there's probably a correlation that could be made between the loss of CRP and other impacts as well. So we can get the information that you're looking for you.
Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioner. That's exactly my point. He talked about CRP, but he didn't talk about all the other factors.
Mr. Meyer, are there any state-owned lands enrolled in the CRP program?
Mr. Chairman, no. The Conservation Reserve Program is a private landowner program. It's not eligible for state-owned land.
Are there any programs within DNR, then, that would mirror conservation CRP program where you are being a leader in habitat restoration for pheasants and so forth?
Mr. Chairman, the program that would most closely correlate would be restoration and enhancement activities on state-owned lands within a wildlife management area, for example. We do not do, Board of Water and Soil Resources is our primary outlet to private landowner habitat restoration and improvements. So the state, and that's one of the things we wrestle with as a department, is what kind of activities can we do with those private landowners and on our lands to highlight, showcase types of activities that can be done for restoration activities.
But, Ms. Meyer, if you're talking about up north creating food plots and so forth for different game species, why wouldn't we be more aggressive in our habitat restoration to enhance game species like pheasants in southern and southwestern Minnesota and west central Minnesota on the state-owned land?
Mr. Chairman, members, we try to be as aggressive as we can be. A lot of the funds that we acquire through outdoor heritage is, are used for enhancement and restorations. Unfortunately, the department doesn't have a lot of land holdings in southeastern Minnesota. So, you'd be careful to say unfortunately. But that's one of our areas that we want to concentrate on, is how do we own more land that we can manage for habitat in the Prairie Pothole region of the state. That's a huge priority for us. And you can see, I think, Representative Fabian and Representative Torkelson, the pheasant plan, or I shouldn't say the pheasant plan, the prairie plan that we rolled out last year does talk about that, and I think part of that is working with landowners. I mean, farmers are the first conservationists, working with the agricultural producers to making sure that we're all doing what we can to make sure we have habitat and to maintain water quality wherever we can.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members, moving on to goal three, focusing on the management of Minnesota's natural resources. This is kind of the tourism, taconite, and timber portion of our performance management or conservation agenda. Talking about making sure that our natural resources are contributing to strong and sustainable job markets, economies, and communities. The strategies we're looking at, as I mentioned, healthy, productive forests, develop and manage mineral resources responsibly to enhance environmentally sound mining, sustain healthy watersheds and groundwater to provide clean water flood protection, support and grow that nature-based tourism that we talked about briefly, provide exceptional outdoor recreational experiences, and manage trust fund lands effectively and sustainably to meet our fiduciary responsibilities, continue to provide long-term funding for our education system.
Representative Deal.
Thank you, Chair Fabian. Mr. Meyer, one of the things that we're going to really need for, particularly in the forested counties, is the goal, the actual harvest, the projected harvest, and some of the barriers that we're still experiencing in accessing the forest. And I want to compare that actually with the things that we've received from the advocate aid groups like the TPA. Because I still hear that, whether it's accurate or not, I still hear that we are leaving harvestable wood on the landscape. Is that a market condition? Is that an access condition? Is that a problem that we can't get the wood put up for sale quickly enough? So we kind of have to have an overview, so considering we're at the beginning of the biennium again. And a fair number of people on this committee are serving for the first time. I think that we need to know about that, because that is a real driver. I mean, if people value toilet paper and copy paper, they need to know whether we're getting the product out.
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Dill, you did a good job overviewing all the issues that we're facing. And we will discuss that in detail. Director Forrest Bowe will be here. I'm talking with the chairman. I believe we're going to have spend some time talking about timber industry and some of the reports that have recently been done and some of the barriers that are there. So we look forward to providing that information. Mr. Chairman, members, goal three, as we were talking about, focusing on that economic nature, recreation-based economy. Some of the performance measures are acres of mine land reclaimed, acres of state-administered lands, and forest certification. All of our forestry activities are dual certified, where we have two organizations that certify our forestry activities and also our use of the forest lands, and we maintain that dual certification to help maintain the highest possible timber price for our users or end users. So we're constantly evaluating, making sure that our activities are up to speed and are being, that these resources are being managed sustainably for the long-term future. One of the performance measures that we have on this metric here is talking about trust land net revenues. You can see this slide here, over, I think, $32 million in 2013. 2014 numbers aren't yet certified, but we'll be getting that for you shortly, was generated for this permanent school trust fund. We manage 2.5 million acres of trust lands for long-term economic return to the public schools using sound conservation practices. Most of these revenues are from mining revenues. And all of those mining revenues are from taconite mining. So it does provide a huge, huge part of the corpus of the trust fund. Moving on to that goal four, talking about the department in general, making sure that we have operational excellence and a focus on continuous improvement and service our conservation mission. Several of the strategies, investing wisely to manage our future operational costs, looking at how how much are we paying? How are we driving around? The DNR, our mileage, I'll get a new figure for you. The total mileage of the department was that last biennium was like five times the circumference of the earth or something. We drive a lot, and we try to make sure that we're conserving gas, driving the most fuel-efficient vehicles, and we're carpooling and using Link, using, you know, teleconferencing whenever we can. That is driving down our transportation costs as well. But these internal, you know, the heating, the lights, the gas, those parts of our budgets at home drive a large part of our internal budgets as well. And the more we can reduce those costs means that another dollar to be spent on our missions and goals. So
I think my mileage in the last couple of years is about the same back and forth. Yeah. Representative Ugham has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Meyer, going back to your comments about the school trust lands and things, the legislature directed that there would be a new administrator, standalone administrator of school trust lands. I believe it was last session, maybe session before. And I understand that appointment has not been made yet. Could you update me on the progress for that, and is that going to happen?
Certainly, Mr. Chair, Representative Ugham, it will happen. We're in the process of getting that established right now, just working with some of the logistical pieces of getting that position established is where we're at, and how that position will interface with our trust lands director and within the departments. Some of the things that we're mapping out right now with the Department of Administration.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Ugham.
Mr. Meyer. So there is a finite timeline on this thing then.
Mr. Meyer.
Chairman, Representative Ugham, yes, I would hopefully it can be done within the next several weeks, month maybe.
Representative Ugham.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess that'll do.
Ms. Taylor, is there anything in statute in the that was passed that has some sort of a timeline as to when that should have been accomplished by?
Mr. Chair, members, I don't remember there being an exact date that the appointment needed to be made by. There was funding provided last session, but I don't believe there was a date tied to that. But when the original language was passed, there wasn't any money provided.
Danny, a follow-up. Representative McNamara, have a follow-up on that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Meyer, does the DNR, have you heard from the governor? Will the governor follow state law, and will the new director be under admin?
Mr. Chairman, Representative McNamara, that's one of the things we're working on right now.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Commissioner Meyer, I would strongly recommend that you convey to the governor that we want state law to be followed. Thank you.
Mr. Meyer? Representative Clark has a question.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just wondering, you know, in your booklet that you handed out, you did talk about the diversity in terms of the population of Minnesota that you're trying to serve. Can you tell me how you're doing in terms of the workforce, the DNR, and in terms of this issue?
Mr. Clark.
I didn't see a particular performance measure on that, but are you following that? Seems like an intent. I just want to know how we're doing.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Clark, thank you very much. It is very important to us to have a diverse workforce. I can get you the metrics and where we're at with that by class within the department overall. It is challenging for us sometimes to find that diversity that wants to come work for us. So we're reaching out, trying to do whatever we can, working with tribal colleges, for example, making sure that we have a path for people to go from those tribal colleges into the DNR, providing those internship opportunities. Actually, we were just talking about that last week when I was up north with some members from some of the tribal colleges. How can we make sure that these people have a job that they can know that they're going into, right? And recruitment and retention of diversification classes is something that's a huge priority for us. So I'll get you those metrics and we can talk more about that.
Representative Clark, follow up.
Thank you. Yeah. So you mentioned diversification classes. I'm just wondering, I know my own county is kind of struggling with this issue, and one of the things they decided to do is to do some kind of on-the-job pre-training and training for people who might not, on paper, when they apply for one of the jobs, meet all the criteria, you know, the educational criteria, for example. And so they've developed and are developing, let me say, ways to provide classes and so on that can help bring people up to those levels. And I'm just wondering if that's, when you said classes, I'm not sure what you're talking about, but is there anything like that in mind, or could that be something you'd explore?
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Clark, I was referring to protected classes. I'm not sure what the right term is there.
Okay, sure.
We'll have to reach out. I'm assuming you're talking about Hennepin County. We could certainly reach out to Hennepin County and see what we can glean from what they're looking at doing, and if it is applicable at all to our workforce as well. So it's very important to us, so something we need to make sure. If you look at the demographics statewide, and I don't have the specific information, you all, maybe you know, Representative Clark, but the population estimates of the Hispanic population, I think, within Ramsey County is in the next 20 years is astronomical. We have pockets, Worthington, for example. We try to reach out and make sure our workforce is representative of the actual population that's there. And the challenge is making sure that those people have the education and the knowledge to become relevant into our workforce. So we will try to reach out to Hennepin County and see what we can learn from them.
Thank you.
Representative Clark. Representative Uglem.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Meyer, just a quick return to the school trust lands. I would echo Representative McNamara's comments about the administrator being, you know, standalone. I think the legislative intent of this was not to have them be an employee of the DNR. And I'd like to have a conversation with you afterwards about the timeline on this thing, because we do have to move it forward. It's been much too long.
Mr. Chairman, Representative
Meyer.
That's perfectly fine. We can talk about that. We did have a meeting Tuesday with the School Board Association about moving this forward. We're kind of splitting hairs with it right now, is that, you know, the law says it has to be housed in the Department of Administration. All of the work this person is going to be doing is going to be interfacing with the DNR staff. So the challenge I see is this guy's going to die. Man or woman will go to work, drive over to admin, park their car, go turn their computer on, and then they're going to have to drive over to the DNR office and be there all day, go back to admin and turn their computer off. That's kind of the gist of what we're splitting hairs on right now. So we're trying to figure that piece of it out. Just logistically, we do not argue that it should be standalone. It should be, it's an appointed by the governor, those types of things that are there. So we're just splitting hairs on, as I said, the logistical piece of that. The other piece that we're going to have to discuss once this director is appointed is the $185,000 that was appropriated is not enough to do what this person is saddled with within statute. So the Permanent School Trust Fund Commission, once that is reappointed and members are there, I would assume we'll be talking about that budget. There was also $1 million general fund that was appropriated last biennium that needs to be approved by the legislature, that our trust lands director, Aaron Vandalin, has been working on what those dollars should be used for. So there are substantial conversations that need to occur, and we want to get this position up and running and just make sure it has the tools and it's located where it should be to be most effective.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Meyer. I want to go back to the workforce question, and I've just had I'm concerned about the field staff. I've had conversations with DNR employees well beyond the limits of my district, who shared with me the change in workload over the last several years, which I thought was radically significant, and just trying to maintain boat ramps and that sort of thing. It seemed like their day was, they're running from ramp to ramp to ramp, or trail to trail to trail. And I'm concerned long-term about the expectations on the workforce. Are you looking at that? Are you trying to deal with that?
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Clark, thank you very much for that question. We're concerned as well. I mean, as I talked about the situation up in Hayes Lake, Old Mill, we're to the point where we need to have some serious conversations about what is our workforce. We need to protect our workforce as much as possible. They are our asset, our largest asset we have. And making sure they're safe and not overworked and working efficiently as possible is a huge thing for us. So I'm hopeful that when we get to those budget discussions, we can have a more positive discussion about the future within the areas. I'm assuming you're talking about our general labor workforce. That is the backbone of the DNR and everything we do, and I see some of them are in the audience today. Thank you so much for all the work you do. You are the DNR, and we really appreciate it. So.
General Hornstein.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Welcome to the committee.
Thank
you. I wanted to just get into a little more detail. Yesterday I asked the commissioner, I complimented the agency on acknowledging the impact of climate change on wildlife populations in the strategic report here. But I wanted to just get a little more detail on some of the strategies that you may be using on this issue, not only on wildlife, but it's also affecting our forests, et cetera, and fisheries. And is the DNR really looking? He mentioned some adaptive management techniques that you're using, but can you give maybe a little more detail about how the agency is responding to climate change on some of these natural resource systems?
I can try, but I am by no means an expert, right? We've been looking at climate adaptation and how do we manage our forest lands and our WMAs into the future very seriously. What do we plant? And there's some slides that we can show you and some reports that show the succession of the forest, right? It won't be in Representative Bill's district, but in parts of the state where we have significant conifers, you know, they could be oaks. It could be an oak savanna in the next 50 years. So looking at that succession and what that means to our timber industry, things like that. How do we, you know, the walleye lakes, what do those turn into? You know, bass lakes? And so at the biological level, our staff has been working not only statewide but nationally on the issue. So rather than myself try to bore you with the little things I know, let me get the right staff in touch with you, and we can provide the committee with some more information.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate that, and I think especially you mentioning, you know, the walleye situation, I think that would be of a lot of interest to people, and certainly not boring. I think it's a important and an urgent issue that we need to talk about.
I meant my comment, Meyer, probably, yeah. That would just be trying to
No, I understand
what our staff are actually doing.
Yeah, no, but you're not boring at all, Mr. Assistant Commissioner.
Neither are you, Representative.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to try to move on and finish us up with this presentation here. As we were talking about operational excellence in goal four, working with our staff, making sure kind of what Representative Clark was talking about, or Representative Johnson, I should say, developing the DNR's workforce by ensuring a safe, respectful, and dynamic work environment, practice adaptive management to respond to rapid changes in unpredictable environments. Some of the performance measures that we have are acres made accessible through acquisition or exchange, percent renewable energy use, kind of Representative Hornstein, what you're talking about in DNR facilities. And this slide kind of shows at an operational level what we've been trying to do, trying to meet the state's 30% energy reduction goal by 2025 by increasing our energy efficiency and reducing energy use within our offices. Some of our parks have solar energy arrays or solar power arrays, and we have the monikers right there so people can see it, because it is a gateway, right? People will come to register the park, they'll say, well, what's that box? And we'll say, well, we're generating X number of volts right now going into the batteries that will power these lights. It's a way to educate people on the use and that adaptation of alternative energy, renewable energy sources. So we're very conscious of that and working to making sure that we're there. We've reduced our emissions by 7.5% over the past 4 years. Equivalent to 2,240 metric tons of carbon dioxide equivalents, and we're on our way to reaching that 30% goal, making sure that we have fuel-efficient cars and equipment, reducing the miles that we're driving, like we talked about, and teleconferencing wherever we can. Mr. Chairman, members, that kind of wraps up the formal presentation. I still have a few minutes for questions that are there. This is my contact information, my email, my direct office line. Please call me or shoot me an email with whatever we can help you with. Many of you do it right now. If you don't have this contact information, write it down or save this, and we will get back to you as soon as we possibly can with whatever we can do to help you. So.
Mr. Meyer, I noticed you don't have your cell phone number on there. Have you changed that because of me? Or
I think you still have it.
Mr. Meyer, I'd like to follow up on Representative Johnson's comments about workforce and so forth. You know, I have friends who are employees of the DNR. I know a lot of people find that amazing, but they are. They talked to me about, our local people with their boots on the ground, about you know, so many of the things that they have to go to. They got to go to this meeting, they got to go to that meeting, and they got to do training for this, they got to, you know, and all those sorts of things. It would seem to me that some of that stuff, and they mentioned, why can't we do that electronically? Why do we have to drive to Bemidji and go down there for these meetings and to other places around the state? I would encourage you within the agency to find ways. You know, you talked about reducing the number of miles driven. You know, some of those types of things, and we've all been involved in them, right? I mean, we've all gone to a conference or a meeting where we come away from there going, really, what did we do? You know, why are we doing that? I think it's important to repurpose what's going on within the agency with regards to those types of things and let them do the things that they do best, which is enforcement or forestry or whatever. Other questions from the committee? Comments? Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I may, just on your comment about folks coming to Bemidji, we make a concerted effort to bring some of the northern county folks down to Bemidji so they're well-rounded.
Central Minnesota. And
so I just wanted to comment there.
Yeah. Well, we'd like to have those meetings in Roseau then.
Mr. Chairman, just real quickly before we wrap up here, my cell phone number is not here, but I'm going to give it to you folks so you have it. It's 651.
Oh. He and the governor, Mr. Chair, like to give out their cell phone number.
343.
I have that too.
4838. So, and I'm here most of the time, it seems like nowadays. So, whatever you need, please feel free to get a hold of us and we will help you get what you need.
Mr. Meyer, I'd like to caution you, you do realize we are broadcasting today. So
that's fine. Okay. I work 24/7, Mr. Chair. There's no more questions. I just want to say thank you very much for giving us this opportunity to present to you today, and we look forward to working with you this session, having a productive session, and getting us our needs met so our workforce is safe and productive. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Meyer. Members, we were 2 minutes late starting, but we're 11 minutes early adjourning.
For this permanent school trust fund. We manage 2.5 million acres of trust lands for long-term economic return to the public schools using sound conservation practices. Most of these revenues are from mining revenues. All of those mining revenues are from taconite mining. So it does provide a huge, huge part of the corpus of the trust fund. Moving on to that goal 4, talking about the department in general, making sure that we have operational excellence and a focus on continuous improvement and service to service our conservation mission. Several of the strategies, investing wisely to manage our future operational costs, looking at how much are we paying? How are we driving around? The DNR, our mileage, I'll get a new figure for you. The total mileage of the department was that last biennium was like 5 times the circumference of the earth or something. We drive a lot, and we try to make sure that we're conserving gas, driving the most fuel-efficient vehicles, and we're carpooling and using link, using, you know, teleconferencing whenever we can. That is driving down our transportation costs as well. But these internal, you know, the heating, the lights, the gas, those parts of our budgets at home drive a large part of our internal budgets as well, and the more we can reduce those costs means that another dollar to be spent on our missions and goals. So
I think my mileage in the last couple of years is about the same back and forth. Yeah. Representative Uglum has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Meyer, going back to your comments about the school trust lands and things, the legislature directed that there would be a new administrator, standalone administrator of school trust lands. I believe it was last session, maybe session before. And I understand that appointment has not been made yet. Could you update me on the progress for that, and is that going to happen?
Certainly, Mr. Chair, Representative Uglum, it will happen. We're in the process of getting that established right now, just working with some of the logistical pieces of getting that position established is where we're at, and how that position will interface with our trust lands director and within the departments. Some of the things that we're mapping out right now with the Department of Administration.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Uglum.
Mr. Meyer. So there is a finite timeline on this thing then.
Mr. Meyer. Chairman, Representative Uglum, yes, I would hopefully it can be done within the next several weeks, month maybe.
Representative Uglum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess that'll do.
Ms. Taylor, is there anything in statute in the that was passed that has some sort of a timeline as to when that should have been accomplished by?
Mr. Chair, members, I don't remember there being an exact date that the appointment needed to be made by. There was funding provided last session, but I don't believe there was a date tied to that. But when the I believe when the original language was passed, there wasn't any money provided.
Yeah. Danny, a follow-up. Representative McNamara, have a follow-up on that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Meyer, does the DNR, you know, excuse me, do you have you heard from the governor? Will the governor follow state law, and will the new director be under admin?
Mr. Chairman, Representative McNamara, that's one of the things we're working on right now.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Commissioner Meyer. I would strongly recommend that you convey to the governor that we want state law to be followed. Thank you,
Mr. Meyer. Representative Clark has a question.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just wondering. You know, in your booklet that you handed out, you did talk about the diversity in terms of the population in Minnesota that you're trying to serve. Can you tell me how you're doing in terms of the workforce, the DNR, and in terms of this issue? Just, I didn't see a particular performance measure on that, but are you following that? Seems like an intent. I just want to know how we're doing.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Clark, thank you very much. It is very important to us to have a diverse workforce. I can get you the metrics and where we're at with that by class within the department overall. It is challenging for us sometimes to find that diversity that wants to come work for us. So we're reaching out, trying to do whatever we can, working with tribal colleges, for example, making sure that we have a path for people to go from those tribal colleges into the DNR, providing those internship opportunities. Actually, we were just talking about that last week when I was up north with some members from some of the tribal colleges. How can we make sure that these people have a job that they can know that they're going into, right? And recruitment and retention of diversification classes is something that's a huge priority for us. So I'll get you those metrics and we can talk more about that.
President Clark, follow up.
Thank you, yeah. So you mentioned diversification classes. I'm just wondering, I know my own county is kind of struggling with this issue, and one of the things they decided to do is to do some kind of on-the-job pre-training and training for people who might not, on paper, when they apply for one of the jobs, meet all the criteria, you know, the educational criteria, for example. And so they've developed and are developing, let me say, ways to provide classes and so on that can help bring people up to those levels. And I'm just wondering if that's, when you said classes, I'm not sure what you're talking about, but is there anything like that in mind, or could that be something you'd explore?
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Clark, I was referring to protected classes. I'm not sure what the right term is there.
Okay, sure.
But we'll have to reach out. I'm assuming you're talking about Hennepin County. We could certainly reach out to Hennepin County and see what we can glean from what they're looking at doing and if it is applicable at all to our workforce as well. So it's very important to us, so something we need to make sure. If you look at the demographics statewide, and I don't have the specific information, you all, maybe you know, Representative Clark, but the population estimates of the Hispanic population, I think, within Ramsey County is in the next 20 years is astronomical. We have pockets, Worthington, for example. We try to reach out and make sure our workforce is representative of the actual population that's there. And the challenge is making sure that those people have the education and the knowledge to become relevant into our workforce. So we will try to reach out to Hennepin County and see what we can learn from them.
Thank you.
Representative Clark. Representative Uglum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Meyer, just a quick return to the school trust lands. I would echo Representative McNamara's comments about the administrator being, you know, standalone. I think the legislative intent of this was not to have them be an employee of the DNR. And I'd like to have a conversation with you afterwards about the timeline on this thing, because we do have to move it forward. It's been much too long.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Meyer, that's perfectly fine. We can talk about that. We did have a meeting Tuesday with the School Board Association about moving this forward. We're kind of splitting hairs with it right now, is that, you know, the law says it has to be housed in the Department of Administration. all of the work this person is going to be doing is going to be interfacing with the DNR staff. So the challenge I see is this guy's going to, man or woman, will go to work, drive over to admin, park their car, go turn their computer on, then they're going to have to drive over to the DNR office and be there all day, go back to admin to turn their computer off. That's kind of the gist of what we're splitting hairs on right now. So we're trying to figure that piece of it out. Just logistically, we do not argue that it should be standalone. It should be, it's an appointed by the governor, those types of things that are there. So we're just splitting hairs on, as I said, the logistical piece of that. The other piece that we're going to have to discuss once this director is appointed is the $185,000 that was appropriated is not enough to do what this person is saddled with within statute. So the Permanent School Trust Fund Commission, once that is reappointed and members are there, I would assume we'll be talking about that budget. There was also $1 million general fund that was appropriated last biennium that needs to be approved by the legislature, that our trust lands director, Aaron Vandalin, has been working on what those dollars should be used for. So there are substantial conversations that need to occur, and we want to get this position up and running and just make sure it has the tools and it's located where it should be to be most effective.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Meyer. I want to go back to the workforce question, and I've just had, I'm concerned about the field staff. I've had conversations with DNR employees well beyond the limits of my district who shared with me the change in workload over the last several years, which I thought was radically significant, and just trying to maintain boat ramps and that sort of thing, it seemed like their day was, they're running from ramp to ramp to ramp, or trail to trail to trail. And I'm concerned long-term about the expectations on the workforce. Are you looking at that? Are you trying to deal with that?
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Clark, thank you very much for that question. We're concerned as well. I mean, as I talked about the situation up in Hayes Lake, Old Mill, we're to the point where we need to have some serious conversations about what is our workforce. We need to protect our workforce as much as possible. They are our asset, our largest asset we have. And making sure they're safe and not overworked and working efficiently as possible is a huge thing for us. So I am hopeful that when we get to those budget discussions, we can have a more positive discussion about the future within the areas. I'm assuming you're talking about our general laborer workforce, that is the backbone of the DNR and everything we do, and I see some of them are in the audience today. Thank you so much for all the work you do. You are the DNR, and we really appreciate it.
Representative Hornstein.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
I wanted to just get into a little more detail. Yesterday, I asked the commissioner, I complimented the agency on having a acknowledging the impact of climate change on wildlife populations in the strategic report here. But I wanted to just get a little more detail on some of the strategies that you may be using on this issue, not only on wildlife, but it's also affecting our forests, et cetera, and fisheries. And is the DNR really looking? He mentioned some adaptive management techniques that you're using, but can you give maybe a little more detail about how the agency is responding to climate change on some of these natural resource systems?
I can try, but I am by no means an expert, right? We've been looking at climate adaptation and how do we manage our forest lands and our WMAs into the future very seriously. What do we plant? And there's some slides that we can show you and some reports that show the succession of the forest, right? It won't be in Representative Bill's district, but in parts of the state where we have significant conifers, you know, they could be oaks. It could be an oak savanna in the next 50 years. So looking at that succession and what that means to our timber industry, things like that. How do we, you know, the walleye lakes, what do those turn into? You know, bass lakes? And so at the biological level, our staff has been working not only statewide but nationally on the issue. So rather than myself try to bore you with the little things I know, let me get the right staff in touch with you, and we can provide the committee with some more information.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that, and I think especially you mentioning, you know, the walleye situation, I think that would be of a lot of interest to people. And certainly not boring. I think it's a important and urgent issue that we need to talk about.
I meant my comment. Mr. Meyer, probably that would just be trying to.
No, I understand.
What our staff are actually doing.
So. Yeah, yeah. No, but you're not boring at all, Mr. Assistant Commissioner.
Neither are you, Representative.
Thank you. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to try to move on and finish us up with this presentation here. As we were talking about operational excellence and goal four, working with our staff, making sure kind of what Representative Clark was talking about, or Representative Johnson, I should say, developing the DNR's workforce by ensuring a safe, respectful, and dynamic work environment, practice adaptive management to respond to rapid changes in unpredictable environments. Some of the performance measures that we have are acres made accessible through acquisition or exchange, percent renewable energy use, kind of Representative Hornstein, what you're talking about in DNR facilities. And this slide kind of shows at an operational level what we've been trying to do, trying to meet the state's 30% energy reduction goal by 2025 by increasing our energy efficiency and reducing energy use within our offices. Some of our parks have solar energy arrays or solar power arrays, and we have the monitors right there so people can see it, because it is a gateway, right? People will come to register the park, they'll say, well, what's that box? And we'll say, well, we're generating X number of volts right now going into the batteries that will power these lights. It's a way to educate people on the use and that adaptation of alternative energy, renewable energy sources. So we're very conscious of that and working to making sure that we're there. We've reduced our emissions by 7.5% over the past 4 years. Equivalent to 2,240 metric tons of carbon dioxide equivalents, and we're on our way to reaching that 30% goal, making sure that we have fuel-efficient cars and equipment, reducing the miles that we're driving, like we talked about, and teleconferencing wherever we can. Mr. Chairman, members, that kind of wraps up the formal presentation. I still have a few minutes for questions that are there. This is my contact information, my email, my direct office line. Please call me or shoot me an email with whatever we can help you with. Many of you do it right now. If you don't have this contact information, write it down or save this, and we will get back to you as soon as we possibly can with whatever we can do to help you. So.
Mr. Meyer, I noticed you don't have your cell phone number on there. Have you changed that because of me? Or
I think you still have it,
Mr. Meyer, I'd like to follow up on Representative Johnson's comments about workforce and so forth. You know, I have friends who are employees of the DNR. I know a lot of people find that amazing, but they are. They talked to me about, I mean, our local people with their boots on the ground about, you know, so many of the things that they have to go to. They got to go to this meeting, they got to go to that meeting, and they got to do training for this, they got to, you know, and all those sorts of things. It would seem to me that some of that stuff, and they mentioned, why can't we do that electronically? Why do we have to drive to Bemidji and go down there for these meetings and to other places around the state? I would encourage you within the agency to find ways. You know, you talked about reducing the number of miles driven. You know, some of those types of things, and we've all been involved in them, right? I mean, we've all gone to a conference or a meeting where we come away from there going, really, what did we do? You know, why are we doing that? I think it's important to repurpose what's going on within the agency with regards to those types of things and let them do the things that they do best, which is enforcement or forestry or whatever. Other questions from the committee? Comments? Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I may, just on your comment about folks coming to Bemidji, we make a concerted effort to bring some of the northern county folks down to Bemidji so they're well-rounded.
Central Minnesota. And
so I just wanted to comment there.
Yeah. Well, we'd like to have those meetings in Roseau then.
Mr. Chairman, just real quickly before we wrap up here, my cell phone number isn't on here, but I'm going to give it to you folks so you have it. It's 651.
He and the governor, Mr. Chair, like to give out their cell phone.
343.
I have that too.
4838. So, and I'm here most of the time, it seems like nowadays. So, whatever you need, please feel free to get a hold of us and we will help you get what you need.
Mr. Meyer, I'd like to caution you, you do realize we are broadcasting today. So.
That's fine. Okay. I work 24/7, Mr. Chair. If there's no more questions, I just want to say thank you very much for giving us this opportunity to present to you today, and we look forward to working with you this session, having a productive session, and getting us, our needs met so our workforce is safe and productive. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Meyer. Members, we were 2 minutes late starting, but we're 11 minutes early adjourning.